Blog Talk Radio.
This song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant is not the name of the restaurant. That's just the name of the song. And that's why I call the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Now it all started two Thanksgivings ago, it was 2 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I went up to visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice doesn't live in the restaurant. She lives in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Fasha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there, and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving. And we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before, and with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one. Till we came to a side road, and off the side of the side road was another 15-foot cliff, and at the bottom of the cliff was another pile of garbage. And we decided that one big pile is better than two little piles, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obi. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage, and wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obi, cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage." After speaking to Obi for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter and said that we had to go down and pick up the garbage, and also had to go down and speak to him at the police officer station. So we got in the red VW microbus with the shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, headed on toward the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one or two things that Obi could have done at the police station, and the first was that he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. Another thing was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't even counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, "Obi, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on." I said, "Shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car." And that's what we did. We sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote.
Welcome back, my friends, to where the music never ends. We're so glad for all your minds that we find, that we find. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Late Night Poets Rhythm and Rhyme Show. We are part of the world's largest community. That's oldpoetry.com, and there you shall find us, the Late Night Poets. We put these radio shows on 7 nights a week, Monday through Sunday, 10 p.m. till midnight. Come hang with our wild dove, Luyu, in Nature and Passion on Mondays. Dig into the twisted thoughts of the twisted sisters on Twisted Tuesdays. Turn up the heat with the Art of Seduction on Wednesday. Thursdays are split between In Our Craft or Selling Art with Richard and Neutron, and Double Helix with Aphasiana and Dex. Friday, come fill my eyes with open poetry, and every other Saturday, come sit with Gray Eyes howling at the moon in the Canadian wilds as he brings you bad company. And if you're looking for a little more edgy realm, then please check out our After Midnight shows, 12:30 to 2:30 a.m., Monday through Saturday mornings. Black Lace Diaries is off for tonight, but join us Tuesday. Take a walk on the wild side and soar into the skies with Neutron and Captain as the After Midnight Bombers on Wednesday. Fridays are split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. And Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babbler as they teach you the fine art of being part sinner, part saint. Check out the contests and prompts for all of our shows and call in to read your poems and hang for the fun. How you doing tonight, Pam?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
All righty.
You know, my absolute favorite line in that first part of that song is the first thing that could have happened was they would have given us an award for being so brave and honest on the phone. But that wasn't likely to happen.
No, well, the 60s were a different time.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, actually, that story is pretty much true. It's all satirical, but it's also done with a heavy bend against the it's a war protest song. So.
Oh, I did notice that. I absolutely did notice
the
that.
The garbage angle is a true story. He did get popped for dropping off garbage. And he drops some little notes. You mean shovels, rakes, and implements of destruction. A nice little note to the war itself. And then the angle about the draft and everything, getting shots and what the he goes through a whole dissertation on that and everything. And, kill. There's some funny parts in it. So.
Oh yes. Yeah, I did actually listen to the whole song. I did not get a chance to watch the movie. I started to, but, you know, life just kind of got in the way.
You should watch the movie because that part about going to see the shrink, he's in there jumping up and down, yelling, kill, 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 and so's the shrink. And they say, you're just what we want. Come on down to this room.
Oh, man, that does sound great. Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. But, you know, that's the great thing about, well, that's pretty much why satire was invented. You know, satire was invented, you know, back in ancient Greece, I believe, to make fun of the higher-ups, to make fun of the political system, you know. And it still serves that same purpose nowadays. That song there, Alice's Restaurant, definitely did a wonderful job of using satire to make a social political statement of the time.
That's why fools were so good at their jobs, and they were treated so nicely. They weren't so unintelligent, and they lived pretty damn well, because they got to say things, and nobody got to complain.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yep, and they were often used as a messenger because they could say things to the king that nobody else could, for sure. But great choice for a prompt tonight. I'm looking forward to delving into tonight's poetry and, you know, and all that fun stuff. And with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bring Kel on. So welcome to the show, Kel. Glad you could join us. Are you
hello,
there?
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello. Okay. Maybe we don't have Kel. Area code 419? You're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
Oh, this is Adam. Adam Ockerson.
Oh, okay.
Adam, how you doing?
Hey, Adam.
Hey, what's
good
up?
Good to hear you.
it's great to be heard.
Yeah, you have the same area code as another one of our callers, so I just assumed it was her.
Oh, interesting.
But,
cool.
Yeah, awesome.
This is my second call-in. The last time you knew me as Rorschach Splat.
That was your name before. I remembered it was Rorschach something, and I was like, Rorschach Test, Rorschach. You know,
well,
I was
Splatter
just trying
was
to
too
think
long.
Of every... Yeah. Well, it was a good, yeah, well, you know, that, and then that new name you have, I was trying to tell somebody your full name, and I just butchered it. My tongue just tripped over it. So I'm glad we have permission to call you Adam.
Absolutely.
Well, all right. We're glad to have you, Adam, but rather than throw you right into the fire, we'll do a couple of other pieces first so you can get into the role of things and get comfortable before we get to you. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Perfect.
All right. First thing we have is Homeward Bound, This Kasserine by Rich F. And Rex, will you go ahead and give that a read for us, please?
Homeward Bound. This Passerine by Rich F. Splashing, sliding in these rain-soaked streets, Splashing, sliding in these rain-soaked streets, gaslight lamps that flicker in the rain, slipping, seeking solace paths complete to follow shadows through the country lanes, the sudden, sodden fields that capture me, this clinging mud disturbs my reverie. Oh, where my roots, my homebound track, the tortured trees of menace dance around. Their tantric tangos lead me there and back. I scream my passion raptures, make no sound. And in the blinding darkness, devil cries, and blood-red crimson corvids fill the skies. At last the moon, to light my very way, illumines now the road that I should follow. A fast car, headlights shine as bright as day. And in the darkness I no longer wallow. The door that opens, and I now jump in, these banshee engines revving, ghastly din. Homeward bound, this passerine, corvid vapors crystal clean, vortex vapors gasoline, pistons pumping passerine, dead and jumping mean machine. O faceless, deathly driver, please make haste, the russet raven on the wing tonight, for she will guide us all my hopes to face. Her tattered torture wings my fears at night. We leave the streets and country lanes behind. The driver specked with speed and can't rewind. Fast forward now, ease my racing mind. Please guide me home now, Passerine, perfection. Passion's pumping, open road direction. Sudden stop sign, car, flash, carapace. Raven spirit soaring into space. End poem. And, Rich was sick last week, and he didn't get into Joanne Shaw. He dropped this on Monday for us, so I thought it'd be a nice kickoff. All right, Pam, why don't you start us off?
All right. Well, first of all, I have to say how great it is to see Rich again and to see him writing. I'm so glad he's feeling better and, you know, that we get to have his poetry back with us. As always, great rhyme, flow, and alliteration on a technical level. I really like, well, I had to look up passerine, and I'm guessing it's, from what I read, a type of a bird, like a passenger pigeon, like a carrier pigeon.
Which incorporates a number of birds, a lot of them. There's finches
said it was like a home-seeking, yeah, bird. Okay, so it covers a number of birds. Okay, cool. Well, that's good to know. Yeah, well, you know, and I like how this is about racing, and it can be taken very literally, which it probably should be, you know, and the idea of racing birds or racing cars. But it kind of also, to me, has the idea of the chaotic way that life sometimes gets our emotions racing, our minds racing. I really like, aware my route, my homebound back, the tortured trees of menace dance round, their tantric tangles lead me there and back. I scream my passion raptures, makes no sound. I like the tantric tangles to describe the trees as if it's kind of trees that are all knotted together. And so there's really no idea, there's kind of like this blinding darkness because of how close the trees are. I also like, O faceless, deathly driver, please make haste, the rusted raven on the wing tonight, for she will guide us all my hopes deface, her tattered, tortured wings, my fears ignite. With the raven feeling like a messenger of death, it kind of has this feeling of like just being around that home stretch of life, of the race of life, and that, you know, there's just nothing left except to look at and kind of accept the end. Like I said, just really wonderful to see him, and I love how he uses all the imagery that has to do with racing. So very cool.
Nice set, Pam. Thank you very much. And Adam, how about you? What did you think?
excuse me, sorry. It was good. It was good, honestly. Like, without being able to read, just listening, it was very difficult for me to. Because I looked on the list and I couldn't find it. Like, I was searching for it desperately, so I could read it as you read it, and I couldn't find it, so I could, properly soak it in, because I have more of a reading comprehension than just listening. So it was very difficult for me just to listen and be like, oh, I get that and that. So I apologize. Not being able to do that, but I could tell that the rhythm of it and the timing was pretty well done, very poetic and good. And the concept of the idea is great from your explanation. So, sorry for my limited feedback on that.
All right, we'll get to that. I'll shoot over the link.
Well, aren't you in Late Night Poet?
I was looking at the list of all the admissions. I didn't see it there.
All poem links are, when they're read, are posted in Late Night Poets. Just to let you know.
Okay, let me, like in the chat window or something.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, let me. My bad. Yeah, because that's typical of doing it. Yeah, I apologize. Let me close. I don't know.
Yeah, and if you don't.
But anyway, just skip me on this.
No problem. We'll get you covered in and going. What got me with this is by the time we finished out near the end, O faceless, deathly driver, please make haste, the rusted raven on the wing tonight, or she will guide us, all my hopes deface, her tattered, tortured wings, my fears ignite. We leave the streets and country lanes behind, the driver's specter speeding can't rewind. Fast forward now to ease my racing mind. With that stanza alone, my guess is that the passerine has been hit by the car and now is dwelling in the radiator because of the language hit on the revving engine and the smell of gas and all that. And these are his dying thoughts and words as the car races off into the distance in another world. And the back end of this, the bottom end, please guide me home now, past serene perfection, passions pumping, open red direction, sudden stop sign, car crash, carapace, raven spirit soaring into space. So there's that note, the raven being the bringer of death, or at least the note to death, and he ending up being in that radiator, now racing skyward once more. But the death now at his back, so to speak. All right, Pam.
Great comment, Rex. All right. Before we go on to the next poem, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bring Kel on. So welcome, Kel. Glad you could join us.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hey, Kel.
Hi, Rex. Hi, Pam.
How's it going?
It's great.
Awesome sauce.
Hell yeah.
Always good to hear you.
I'm sorry I've missed the last couple of weeks.
Oh, no worries. We understand what it's like to be busy.
Yeah. It's been good.
Awesome. Awesome.
How are you guys?
Oh, well, I'm doing awesome, as always. And, yeah. Yeah, I had a nice, simple Thanksgiving that went well, and, you know, life is good.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, then, let's get on to number two there, Pam. What's it?
All right. Up next, we have Between Gentle Rain and Hailstones by Eric Svensson. And we do have a SoundCloud for that one. So I'm going to go ahead and push play.
Between Gentle Rain and Hailstones comes a mean monster hailstorm. Papa, Papa, the corn. Big smile adorns Papa's face. It's good for them, my boy. Corn still young and strong. Lo and behold, never saw corn grow so big and tall. Between gentle rain and hailstorms, human hearts aren't as strong as young corn. Pain threshold may be remarkable, but persistent hammering breaks down, causes mind meniscus to overflow. Also seen hail that disseminates corn ready for the picking. Raggedy ragdoll strips weep amongst shattered cobs. Between gentle rain and hailstorms, love sometimes falls along the wayside, where it withers and dies because it has no roots for. Some love falls on rocky ground with little soil, blooms quickly, but shallow soil nips it in the bud. Hearts are filled for seed sowing, aren't they? Seedling love wishes to sprout to its fullest potential. Between gentle spring rain and hailstorms, people aren't meant to be bonsai trees. Restrain, contain a mighty olive tree, clip its roots, nip its tender leaves, create a containable, manageable midget, a vague shadow of its free counterparts. Between gentle rain and hailstorms, life's threshing floor teaches us, though love's way may be steep and hard, when its intention falls by the wayside or on rocky ground, abdication of a throne is bravery. Takes greater courage to walk away. Why stay? End up raggedy rag doll, stripped of all dignity and self-worth. End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And Kel, you're the newbie in the house. Why don't you start us off?
Oh, gee, thank you so much, Rex. love you too, man. Love you too. Oh, boy. This is really... Well, you can tell it's Eric. I'm actually going to go with the very last stanza, because in between everything else that you wrote in this piece, which was epic, by the way, I thought it was very awesomely done. I love the little bit of a moral that he puts into this story. Life's threshing floor teaches us, though love's way may be steep and hard, when its intention falls by the wayside or on rocky ground, abdication of a throne is bravery. I think it's being this last stanza was really the very culmination of the whole thing, is this, you know, speaking up for the rights of our land, and, you know, this is really well done.
Well, thank you very much, Kelly. And Adam, did you get to see this one?
Yes, I read along with it. And
excellent.
I commented, but yeah, this blew me away. Like, I love the repeating between gentle rain and hailstorms. Very vanilla-ish, you know, like, yet not, of course, but that harking back to that line over and over. And, you know, early on when he sets the stage of hearts are not as strong as young corn, like, and then it's a lesson, right, you know, from his father, or this character telling of this, actually. It's he's telling of another story that he heard. So he's lived his life under this story or this lesson or this moral he was taught, and he's repeating it, you know, down the line. And I just, it blew me away. It's such a beautiful and deep read, and so poetic, and it's true, and it's a very nature. And congrats, you know, bravo, for real.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Adam, and you're right. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I like when Eric writes about when he grew up on the farm and the lessons that he learned from it. You know, I like the first stanza where there's that advice from the father about the hail. It's good for them, boy. Corn's still young and strong. Lo and behold, never saw corn grow so big and tall. It's like the idea when you have to, what is that when you clip back, like, trees so that they'll grow better, like the branches. Pruning, yeah, that's it. It's like, yeah, when you prune something, like I remember I used to have raspberry bushes and they weren't growing real well, and somebody told me that you have to trim them down, and sure enough, they started growing better. Like that whole idea, and that works really well for the whole idea of sometimes, you know, we need to step back so we can learn and we can grow. And I do also like the repetitiveness of between gentle rain and hailstorms, because, you know, the weather comes in all types and every type. I like how in here there's that overall message that all types of weather can be seen as a blessing if we just look at them the right way. And, like, the whole idea that all types of, you know, growth happens and under different environments. I really like the line, people aren't meant to be bonsai trees.
Right.
String, contain a mighty olive tree, clip its roots, nap its tender leaves. You know, I like the idea that we're not meant to be contained and shaped by other people. We're supposed to be shaped by the freedoms that we experience. So just excellent write and very well done.
Oh, well said, you guys. You've hit on the whole thing. It is a moral. It starts with that opening stanza, offering up the thoughts of the father, passing down to the son, and finishes right on the back end, as Kel brought up, with the retelling. There's again, passing it on to the next generation. And that thought with the bonsai trees was perfectly in that note, because people aren't meant to be trees as containable, manageable midgets. A great
yeah.
shadow of its free counterparts. They're meant to stand tall and strong, and the only way to do that is by withstanding that rain and the hailstorms. And again, he hits on gentle rain and hailstorms. You get gentle rain and the thunder and lightning angle. There is a note to you get the warmth and you get the cold. And the only, and that's how you grow as a person. Just like the corn withstands the droughts, but also withstands those hailstorms and heavy rains. Why? Because they need the stuff to grow. It's what gives them life, what gives us life. So the great moral for this is wonderful. Eric did a great job, and thank you for the donation, Eric. All right, Pam, what we got next?
Just picture.
She said she'd be right back, and she's got mine up.
Oh, okay. I should have refreshed.
Yeah, that's always key, going to refresh.
There we go.
All right, Kel.
Okay, Pull Up a Chair by Kel Smiles. Right down the street side of empty lot, railroad tracks further down the block. Not far off, no matter which way you plan to go, get there is a chance. You won't miss out on the circumstance. Always plenty to go around. Even you can appreciate all that is on offer there. For at a daughter's of a mother's house, she's a mother herself, kids underfoot, of all ages, kind of like stair steps going up and up, filling to the very top floor, but there's only 2 floors and 3 rooms. It's a good thing some are half grown. When you arrive at your destination for the best Thanksgiving meal, but I need to go around here and there, not counting on where to find a chair to set your plate at the table or a placement for your butt. Just pull up a chair or sit on the floor as advice from a mother of a mother's mother herself, settling down on the last chair available in the kitchen of her daughter's house, where there is usually a crowded room on Thanksgiving Day. She's got the goods like turkey or ham, mashed potatoes or sweet yams, pies she made by hand, and don't forget the macaroni and cheese. Please grab a plate. Hold on tight, kids in flight, possibly a little fight over a newborn. They all want best to hold on to your seat or lose it. Just pull up a chair or sit on the floor at a daughter of a mother's house. She lives right on down the road across from you. End of poem.
Oh, great read, Kel. Thank you very much. And you kind of stuck to the thought of the piece itself by rolling this out. Nicely done. Adam, why don't we start with you? What'd you think?
I thought it had a great rhythm. Also, like, definitely harks to the rhythm of it, kind of, and the mode of, like, sit right down, kind of a telling of it. It harks to the prompt of the song, so I really appreciated that. And the humor of it, too, also was another device that was good that went back to the prompt of that song. And just in the end, you know, the unfamiliarity of people coming together and whatever you got to do to make it work. And just like in society, I guess, if you got to sit on the floor, sit at the table. And that picture is just hilarious. Because if I walked into a Thanksgiving dinner and I saw that, I'd immediately leave. So I wouldn't even sit down on the floor. That scares me to death. I saw that. I was like, good grief. If that was what I was coming through, I would be scared to death. All those faces whipped back at you. Oh, good God. All right.
Well, thankfully, it isn't that bad. But I thought the picture was pretty well.
By the time
the
stuff gets passed around, it's all cold. So you got to eat on the fly.
How did they even get that on the table hot?
I got a kick out of that picture too. It is wild and funny because everybody's smiling at the
table. Yeah, they're all grinning.
Damn, that's a massive amount of food. All right, Pam, are you back yet?
Yes, I am. And I have to agree that when I was a kid, that was almost our family thing. Thanksgiving and Christmases, but not quite that bad. And thankfully not, because my family had this thing where just to be just, they would, like, pass, when you ask for something, they would pass it around the opposite direction. So it had to go around to everybody off the table before it got to you. And I just imagine that happening with that picture. But I really like this, Cal. I really like how it has the humor in it, and it has the Americana type feel of, you know, that you don't have to go to a restaurant. But basically, you know, you go into any household where, you know, people welcome people as family. I like that whole vibe to it. I really like where you added in, and don't forget the macaroni and cheese, grab a plate, hold on tight, kids, in flight, possibly a little fight over a newborn. They all want best to hold on to your seat or lose it. You know, there's that whole idea of family, just family and friends can drive you absolutely crazy, but at the same time, there's that you know, feeling of love and togetherness, and wherever you have to sit, that's where you sit. So just excellent write and very well done.
Thank you,
well,
Pam.
With families as large as this, you're your own church congregation all in one. And
right.
I know where the garbage came from. Now it's a restaurant, too.
But, you know, I did that. Not to mention the fun you had in this. You dropped in all the little tidbits that you get with a family gathering as large as this. The fighting over seats. If somebody gets up, somebody's going to steal it because they don't want to sit on the floor no more.
Right.
And the little kids' table is usually filled with the adults, too, because there's so many there.
Oh, yes.
Everybody's sharing everything at once. And you get the little thing at the end, hold on tight, kids in flight, possibly a little fight of a newborn. So there's a touch to not just the fun of the place, but the angle of what the kids get into, which is usually a bit too much afterwards while everybody else is, I'm stuffed, I'm not moving, let the kid be. And that's when the stuff usually happens.
I say my daughter, she always does a fantastic Thanksgiving dinner. And that's the truth of it. But she's got a little house, you know, and she'll pack in like 30 or 40 people, and that's not including the children. I don't know how they do it. I really don't, because there's people flipping everywhere, standing around the table, sitting at the table, kids in the living room doing whatever they're doing, hopefully one or two adults with them, you know, but, yeah, it's usually a packed house. I was trying to go with a little bit of the flow of Alice's restaurant, you know, just mixing it all up, you know, because it was fun. It was really a lot of fun.
Well, you clearly had way too much fun with it.
Oh, I don't know about that, but it was fun.
Hey, be thankful it's only one day a year.
No, oh, yeah, I definitely am.
Every meal like that?
Well,
oh, my God.
Christmas coming up. They'll do it for Christmas, too.
Okay, 2 days a year. Oh, God. It's a good thing you get to visit. That means you don't have to stay.
That's right.
Indeed.
With all those dishes, it's time to beat feet and leave the house.
There you go.
All right, great, great coffee. That's just like when the grandkids come over, you can spoil the car out of them. You know why? You get to
send them back.
Yep.
Get them all hopped up on sugar. Send them back on the parents.
Absolutely.
Break all the rules the parents have set down. Well, Grandma and Grandpa let me do this. Oh, no.
All right, Pam, what we got next?
Uh-oh.
All right, Adam. Your poem is up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Alrighty. Ho hum and sing along. Come on in, have a seat, listen up and sing along if you know this non-beat. I'm going to drag you through the unfolding harmony of life's small window mysteries. So glad we can meet. As you hear this dum-de-dum-de-dum-de-doodle slow stroll I prepared, stay aware. There's a story unfolding here, but it's not about the story. Guess I'm helping you cheat the test, but tests are boring. So let's skip and saunter along. Sing song caroling in an empty church filled with garbage, no pews, people still, just trying to be people. See, what we have abandoned God. You have a modicum of faith. Willing to do the dirty work, good Christian vibes, even with society and the man pushing us down. They don't agree that I can be all that I can be. Conscientious objector, they won't warn me. Slap a gun in the hand, say, go shoot a man. That's the right thing for king and country. The rightly thing for king and country, that is. Too young to drink, too young for a cigarette, too young for sex and regret. Too young to vote, I see, my voice doesn't matter. But ripe enough, I suppose, to know who is good and who is foe. So I'm just strumming along, ho-humming a song, whistling Dixie, wishing I was a brave one. But I won't use a gun, man, ain't trying to kill a man, so I'm not courageous and all that. Just limp helping hand, so strum along to Dylan songs. What a time to be alive, fighting fights I know aren't right. For the man, yeah, he knows these holy rites. Baptized in napalm, burn a world down, ho-hum, sing along if you know this song. One song, two song, three song, four. We have a movement now, oh yeah, baby. We have sound, voices rise and collide, peace not war. We can have it all, yet Oliver's still asking for more. Starving children in the cold, but we have bombs, baby, we have guns. Meal tickets for skids, but I'm going to Alice's restaurant again. End poem.
Great read, Adam. That. Thank you very much.
My anxiety got nervous.
Why don't you kick us off? Bam.
AFK.
Oops. Oh, sorry. I'm here. yeah. Oh, my goodness. The way you read that just really had a nice flow and beat to it. Very cool. I love how you threw in the dum-de-dum-de-dum-da-doodle, slow stroll, I care, stay aware. Wonderful. I mean, I like how you had your own voice in this, and you brought it up to kind of a more modern time, like looking at such issues as smoking and you know, sex and, you know, I kind of felt like there was kind of this idea of hypocrisy in here.
Yes, yes.
You know, and what I really like is that I felt like you reflected well the whole vibe, the whole tone of the prompt song, but with a voice that was clearly your own and a bit more modern. But also looks back. Like, I like where you said, what a time to be alive, fighting fights I know aren't right for the man. Yeah, he knows these holy rites, baptized in napalm, burn a world down, ho-hum, sing along if you know this song. And it's so always intriguing to me when the beat of a poem or a rite is catchy. You know, like you really honestly want to tap your feet to it and shake your hips, but at the same time you're listening to the message going, like, this is some really heavy stuff. And it's the phrase baptized in napalm, all I can think of is that one image that was taken of that the young girl running naked, and because, you know, it was like right after the bomb had gone off. It was but you know what I mean. It's the idea that you don't become, there's kind of this sardonic type feel of the cruel reality that unless you want to burn things down, unless you breathed in the holy napalm, you aren't a true American. And I'm not saying, that's just the thoughts that come to my head. I really think this is a wonderful thought-provoking rite in all that it has to say, and you did an excellent job of reading it.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Nice, I said, Pam, thanks. And Kel, how about you?
Well, Pam hit on a couple things that I was thinking about. I do want to say for sure this is an awesome rite. Absolutely fantastic, Adam.
Okay, thank you.
Really, I like the sing-along parts, you know, but there's so much more to this than just you know, singing along to whatever the beat may be or whatever they want us to hear.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I noted also the hypocrisy in it. And I also think that in the end, what does it say? Yeah, what a time to be alive, fighting fights I know aren't right for the man. Yeah, he knows these holy rites, baptized in napalm. Okay, that wasn't quite. Oh yeah, so I'm not courageous and all that, just limp helping hands, so I strum along to Dylan songs. I think that it takes just as much bravery to admit that you don't feel that you want to be on the killing side of what the man wants as it is to be on the end of a gun. It takes just as much courage, I think, to admit that you don't want to be into that. You don't want to be a part of that. And that you don't agree, you know. It's like just like in the back in the 60s with the Vietnam War and all that, you know, people had the right to say no, and they should still have that right. So very, I think this is a very well profound, very, it's a very good poem. I really liked it.
Thank you.
Well said, girls.
Yes.
I did too. It's a, there's a lot of good stuff in here, especially down near the end, one song, two song, three song. You mentioned Dylan a little above that, but I also got out of that Country Joe and Fish, the Vietnam song where it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? I don't know. Don't ask me. I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. It's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gates. So I got that little section there had me hitting on the vibe of Country Joe and the Fish. And he did that at Woodstock in 69. And you hit on a whole lot of notes from that era, the sort of modicum of faith, the abandoned God angle, the fight for king and country, putting a gun in man, Springsteen, hit it up again later on with going to kill a yellow man, his Vietnam song. So you walk along those very same things, but you hold true to the to Arlo's piece by making this a protest song, as well as something a little deeper in meaning, the thought of something more than just like the thought with napalm. That is very distinctive, and what a time to be alive, fighting fights I know aren't right, for the man Yane knows these holy rites, baptized in napalm, burn the world down, ho hum sing on if you know this song. So there is that note of, especially where you hit on can't smoke, can't drink, can't have sex, yet you're allowed to go fight and die for your country. That was a big thing back then, too. I remember those days. But then you brought it all right back to the present with the very last couple meal tickets for Skids, but I'm going to Alice's restaurant again. There's that nice notation of bringing it all home with the song itself. And you kind of walked on that beat of Guthrie's piece as well. Come on in, have a seat, listen up, and sing along if you know this annoying beat. So you get that little tone of the song that rolls right through the beginning, and you walk it the same way.
Thank you.
Are you welcome?
Yeah. So I really love that you all, you saw it. You seen what I was going for, that I was able to keep my voice when writing through the idea, because I was like, oh my God, this is 18 minutes long. So when I first went to this, I was like, holy God in heaven. And I listened to it, I'm like, okay, it's not about, and that's where the whole, like, it's not about the story came into play, that it's more about the idea and the message all wrapped therein. So when I was like, well, how am I going to do this? It's so long, and how am I going to write this? I'm like, well, I got to write the idea of it. I got to speak of the piece through my own voice, though, and because I'm all about supporting your soldiers, but not the wars, because and at the very end with the whole like Oliver. Okay, so this is also like it's very American and very English too. I'm sure you caught some of those things, and the whole Oliver and all that, because our long dead line of the Senate here, Teddy Kennedy, once told us during the Iraq War, the first 6 years, I believe, for all the money we spent in that war, we could have tore down and rebuilt every school in America, state of the art. And so these ideas permeate inside me how much I hate war, how much I despise of it, because we don't – okay, I don't want to get all, like, you know, on that tangent. But I was trying to, like, convey some of these ideas very lightly and fold them in. And then also the idea of sing-along comes into play with the oding to the original prompt, because he towards the end is like, hey, if you hear one or two or three people singing this, you know, we might have a movement here. And it's kind of that idea with that too, that together we're strong, together we can fight, and like you'll recognize each other through your kind of similar plight of sorts. And but you all nailed it. It's very multifaceted, so you guys all seem to have gotten it on all the various levels. And I was so worried because it was so simply written that it wouldn't come off, like, well, but it seems like it did, so I'm thrilled about that, and just thank you all so much for having me and all that.
Oh, don't doubt the voice you threw in this. You did a great job with it, even though, like everybody knows, we are our own worst critics, so, yeah, I get that angle.
I'm terrible to myself, I swear.
That is so true. If every one of us, we really are our worst critics.
All right, so what we got next?
All right, up next we have Piece Together Pieces of a Thanksgiving Eve by Naomi Sarah. And we do have a SoundCloud for this one, so here we go.
Piece Together Pieces. I walk into Rat Alice's restaurant. My imagination are in a dream. Sit at a little table in the corner, order a cup of coffee and some apple pie on the side, and I scribble upon a napkin. Piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some, shiny brand new, some old and some, shiny brand new. Piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new. As outside raindrops drum upon shimmers of sunlight to the delightful beat of rainbowed umbrellas, oh, dancing, dancing in the wind. Up and down on glistening sidewalks. The trees are dressed in rusty red and orangey yellow as beds of leaves lay at their feet awaiting the blanketed softness of snow. As overhead geese honk, their hurtled V's fading into a black speck in the distant sky, as leaves tumble across lawns to settle at the foot of a for sale sign in front of a now lifeless home where a trash bin stands at the end of its empty driveway like a huge period. And I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new, some old and some shiny brand new. And I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some new, some old and some brand new. And in the other corner, a heartbroken piano man in a raspy roar of a rock and roll refrain belches out the kind of love that turns umbrellas inside out so you'd never dance, singing in the rain. Flips over magician hats so you'd never again hum Abra, Abracadabra as the rain pelts the window panes. And I see my beaten reflection mirrored in one single drop, and I shudder under the rippling effect of me slamming that door shut and walking away from you, walking away from you, walking away from you, walking away from you. And I scribble upon a napkin piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new, some old and some shiny brand new, piece together pieces of poetry like rainbowed umbrellas dancing, shining and brand new, glistening and dancing in the wind.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And I guess I should go off first, huh? I like the thought in this, the opening, hitting on the thought with Alice's restaurant, but here it comes as a reprieve, a place to go, a place to be in the moment because of what's going on. The refrain in the repeat stanzas and a scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new. Piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new. There's a note in those repeats of looking back at what has occurred and looking to future and what might be. There's also some fear in that because the raindrops keep drumming down. The sunlight is now shimmering. Those rainbow umbrellas dancing in the wind, that is a kind of nice note to looking at hope, looking hopefully towards what is going on. But there was one piece in here, what she hit on, that's down near the bottom. As the rain pelts the window panes, and I see my beaten reflection mirrored in one single drop, and I shudder under the rippling effect of me slamming that door. There's a nice, careful note right there. I think the beaten reflection is kind of a literal note. It's not just metaphorical, the beaten down look, or maybe actually having been beaten. You look at the reflection in the mirror and know that door has to be shut now, and that the time is walking away from you, walking away from you. Then again, the repeat slowly, the last time, walking away from you. There's that note of understanding that it is time to move on before something else happens that I can't live to reflect upon, so to speak. And again, repeating that stanza with the chorus of scribble upon a napkin, there's that note to that which is coming future-wise. And Adam, how about you? What do you think?
So, especially after your heartfelt, reflective response to, like, I was already crushed by this. I was already, like, devastated. But there is this hope, but it is still so utterly melancholy, even with the bitter, almost bitter little hope that it gives, that I have to turn away from this no longer. And also, like, she empathizes with the broken-hearted piano man. Like, she's not the only one in there that's wasted through time, almost, of, as you touched on, that you're looking back at. Because also she has, because the old scraps of poetry and the new, right? And she mentions that it's been several verses, like fighting. It's verse written as V-S, as in fighting. But she's referring to her verses also in poetry. And it's like, because she's scribbling these notes, right? And the metaphor in that, it's, she's tired of these fights. She's tired of all of that sort of. But it's in that metaphor that it's just, it feels old. She's the tired scraps of paper. And she is the new hoping writes, but she's still coming to the same place to do it, right? She's coming back and back, and that's why it's like, I don't want to come back here anymore. You know, I'm just like this man, this poem, their piano man in the corner. We keep, like, even if they never spoke, she's identifying with this character, and it's beautiful, like, to think that, you know, we human beings think that on these levels of depth. That's why I love poetry, because we do. You know, sometimes mundane things like going to your casual spot is beautiful. It's beautiful and deep. What's going on there inside the human being is so profound, yet we walk around so busy and self-involved, we forget this. We forget how much we actually affect each other, how much we mean to each other, when sometimes we don't even know it, right? It's just, it's like, I'm blown away. I don't know what to say. Thank you.
Excellent. I'm glad you picked up on that thought with the metaphor for the scraps working old and new and being tired of that. Nicely iterated there. Adam, thank you very much.
And set the groundwork.
How about you?
Did you say Sam?
What do you think? Yeah.
Okay. I just didn't hear you. I really thought this was great. First of all, I mean, the SoundCloud is always just beautiful. Her reading voice is always spot on, and I like how she balances out her background music and her singing. I believe she actually did take pieces of her own poetry and put this in it, which is actually a form. I can't remember what it's called, but I do recognize some of these stanzas from other poems. And I think it's really a cool thing to do. But don't quote me on that. If that's what she did do, because I do swear to goodness, like, the trees are dressed in rusty reds and orangey yellows, beds of leaves lay at their feet. I swear to goodness, I remember those lines from another show. And so it works really well because she's fitting stanzas. Like, there's obviously original lines. Like, I walked into Alice's restaurant. That stanza's original. And I screw up on my napkin. Pieces together, pieces of poetry. That's new. But then she takes these other stanzas from other poems and she puts them together so that they create a cohesive thought, a cohesive story. And I like how she starts it out with, I walk into Alice's restaurant in my imagination or in a dream. So right away we know she's not really at Alice's restaurant. What she is she's caught up in her own head. Her own thoughts, and she's thinking back to things that she's been through, things that she's seen, things that, you know, she's been through. And in the corner of her mind is that broken-hearted piano man. And there's that, that idea that someone she knew before, or maybe it's another version of herself. I really like how she puts this all together and reminds us that as we're scribbling on those napkins, as we're dreaming in our minds of all the everything we once were and all the possibilities of what we could be in the future, we are creating ourselves. I just think this is a wonderful write and very well done.
Nicely said. There was a piece that I recognize. Now a lifeless home where a trash bin stands at the end of its empty driveway, like a huge period. That
yes.
Comes from a dark angle of something that I remember.
Yep.
That might have been around Halloween. Anyway, it fits the motif that you went on with the some old and some shiny brand new. So that works in that motif as well. So I see Court.
Yes, absolutely.
And Kel, how about you?
Well, for one thing, I want to say that I like the balance between her speaking voice and singing the chorus. It just put in a whole different element to the poetry. But otherwise, this is just a really deep and resounding poem. You know, looking back on things she's experienced and things that she has seen and what she's known and piecing it all together in one, in one bit. It's just absolutely beautiful. This one piece where a trash bin stands at the end of its empty driveway, like a huge period. I thought that was really melancholic. Very well done. And the piano man, for some reason, as soon as you mentioned that, it set me to mind Billy Joel. I don't know why. Maybe because he's the piano man.
That song's a little melancholy as well.
Yeah, that was my first thought when she mentioned that. It's Billy Joel, cool. And a raspy roar of a rock and roll refrain. It's just really, I mean, piece by piece, you have to go through it. There's going to be more and more and more. So this is just a very deep and eloquent, eloquent writing. Very well done.
Great comments, gang. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. Where do we go next?
All right. Up next, we have Tina Found a Gun by Martha Gettle, which unfortunately is not a parody of Jamie's Got a Gun, but it does have a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Tina Found a Gun. Tina the turkey, she found a gun. She would make the humans run. She set her sights and figured hard and fired a shot across the yard. The farmer ducked and spun around. The farmer's wife, she hit the ground. And then once more, just for fun, Tina the turkey aimed her gun. Turkey with the gun out on the prowl. Just see the people running out. A leg shot here, an arm shot there. Her aim is not good, but she don't care. She had her aim set on the farmer's wife, but she ran away screaming for her life. Tina thought this is a bit of all right. I'm ready now to put up a fight. Turkey with a gun out on the prowl. Just see the people running out. A leg shot here, an arm shot there. Her aim is not good, but she don't care. She shot the butcher in the leg, and she loved the way he whined and begged. She left him there on his knees. Tina walked away, proud and pleased.
All right, Martha, that was wonderful. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It greatly appreciated. All right, Pam, you're up first. Don't choke on your chicken.
You cut out there, Rex. Did anybody else hear that weird twanging noise? Like somebody just decided to start playing the banjo as soon as Rex was talking?
I haven't got a banjo.
Okay, somebody does.
I think it's the ringing in your ears.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I got to tell you, I just really enjoy dark humor, and this has great dark humor. The whole idea of a turkey with a gun running around, you know, and it's just kind of like the whole idea of the tables being turned. In a way, it makes me think of Animal Farm, with a more humorous approach to it. And I like how, and really, honestly, it does kind of like have that feel to it, because here we are, and you first start out thinking, okay, Tina's just standing up for herself. You know, she's just making sure that she doesn't become dinner. But then she walked away proud and pleased. And being proud and pleased at shooting something just seems, you know, like a very human reaction. So I liked that. And, of course, as always, she's got just wonderful rhyme and flow. I really like Turkey with a Gun Out on the Prowl. Just see the people run and howl. Leg shot here and arm shot there. Her aim is not good, but she don't care. It was like, I was watching an old Western the other day, and I was like, you know, how is it they have all these six shooters that give off like 20 shots at a time? And that's what line reminds me of, is like how the bad guys are always such bad aim, and they have the six shooters and they just keep shooting. But this just made me laugh out loud. It was very well done.
Nice to say. Thank you, Pam. And Adam, how about you?
So I love, man, Pam is so, I just lost it. Just brain farted. Oh my God. The way she can dive in sometimes, like from another angle that you are, like Rex, I'm more like on your level sometimes when it comes to how I get into things, but she has a way of coming. Animal Farm, I wasn't even thinking of that, and because I thought turkey like a hot dog, like a guy that's a hot dog, you know, that's kind of like a turkey. So I was thinking like Tina's a turkey, she's a turkey, so she thinks she's a hot dog, and it actually reminded me of like a young man, like I'm gonna go to war and I'm gonna, you know, like all ready to go, right? And here he's not even a good shot. You know, he's maiming innocent people. He's, you know, so I actually was taking it more as of a metaphor within metaphor. I guess I was kind of off, probably off base. Or maybe it is part of it, the idea there. I would love to have known what they thought or what they actually, like, the intent behind it was from Martha. But, yeah, the Animal Farm, that's totally it. It makes total sense now. And the humor of it was great. But also I felt like that inside the humor, I still felt the concern of reality of the characterization or the personification or whatever you want to say of this turkey, I guess it was just killing. But, yeah, revenge, right? Like, you're not going to eat me. But in my mind, also, I was kind of like seeing it as this, you know, someone going to war, and they're so cocky, and yet they're a hot dog. They're a turkey. They have no skill, no talent, no ability, and they're just getting by. And then how, like, it all turns on them a little bit, and anyways, though, yeah, Pam nailed it. It's totally Animal Farm. Anyways.
great comic. I you got credence in that, and I'll follow up in a little minute. Kel, how about you? What did you think?
Well, I just thought it was funny. And just picturing this turkey running around shooting everybody. You know, this is funny. So I thought it was very well done. It has an awesome rhyme that Martha's poems usually do. She sang it really well. I just thought it was very humorous. I'm not very deep into it. Well done.
Oh, great comments, guys. And, yeah, it was funny as hell. I got a couple of things out of it. One thing, you can roll this as Dr. Seuss meets Brothers Grimm, and this is the story they spun out. And the other thought is Pam mentioned Jamie Got a Gun, begin with the start of this, and this actually does come across as Jamie Got a Gun. And you thought about the angle of war, that she's gone to war with the hot dog. Yes, because if you poke into this, you hit the farmer's wife and the butcher. There's a little abuse there in a metaphorical way. So, yeah, she's picked up the shotgun and she's gone turkey shooting, so to speak. Literally. So everybody got a kick on that one and a right.
Oh, yes.
Into the motor.
Yeah, that was great. That was great.
Awesome comment there, Rex. Actually, I think everybody had awesome comments.
No, you all hit on the right notes. It worked right into that piece. It was well done. I don't think Moth has done a better piece than that one right there. And it was funny as hell.
Oh, it was. It was, for sure. For sure.
All right, what we got next?
All right. Well, Rex, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to put your write up. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Oh, okay.
All righty.
Tyrantula, general relativity in fear. What we need right now is a clear message for the people of this country. This message must be read in every newspaper, heard on every radio, seen on every television. This message must resound through the entire interlink. I want this country to realize that we stand on the edge of oblivion. I want every man, every woman, and child to understand how close we are to chaos. I want everyone to remember why they need us. Winter's dark pall burned and its chilly breath spread. That weighted tonnage heavy on valley breast to its barked concrete crush. Are you ready for soy, locust, and lemongrass leafage for your holiday feasting? Speck all, I'm a carnivore. Lone, beaver, shade of morning, to the tune of Nantucket swallowing lobster thermidor, cognac, and cigars. As Zongwa sucks Texas tea. Nothing to see from Glasgow grin, but Chelsea smiles the man needful tonsure. Chuanana shot of the pressure. Snake oil vermin, plains over plains, coast to coast, calamari tentacle windows, host that beat, cackling all the way. Come to mama, come see your mama, or come to me. Sodomate useful flesh behind Gomorrah's walled gates, and barbed wire tongues some praises for the hollowed Bronx Minotaurus. Thanatos to Wanamosu. How many steps does lead Golmanoff to Solmanoff? 25, 25, 25. Can one amend futurity's concourse, or are we then? Can't. He can't, and can't. Thereby concentrating where they force them, shading the stench, gilding nostrum's seriality. Warm or frozen in prison eye glare, one can smell the tarnished bowels spake, and poison are but cells and mentality, bred, faith, less. A furnace of the few, once more, that pyre for many. And Paul.
Great
read,
Rex.
Wasn't expecting that
early,
even a read. Huh? Wow,
Rex. Are you reading your own comments?
Go ahead.
Okay. All right. And Adam, your thoughts.
Oh, man. Okay. So there was so much going on here. It's captivating me. Like it blew me away, and Rex, I've not like actually read your writing before, or even I think heard a piece of yours. Like I'm blown away, dude. Like especially when we get to the end, that hit at the end, because it's all like you went even further back in war protesting ideology, all the way to Greece, right? With Thanatos and so many other things, the Minotaur, all this harking, and we're like time traveling with you, like through all this variable, like. And some things are kind of like a joke in a way, but the Jewish references really hit me hard. Thinking of the what happened to the Jewish people in World War II through the Nazis and Hitler, and how how the world kind of didn't realize this was about to happen when all knowingly they should have, right? Like, this is how war works, the machine. Like, we see it as a society. We see it coming. We know it's terrible. And, I mean, America took so long to even hop into this that war. It's a travesty. I mean, not to get political about it, but it was a damn travesty that America took so long to get involved in that war. Not until the end, dang near. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, Germany's bombing England, and we're not even in the war yet officially. Like, are we allies or not? I don't know, man. I'm not intelligent enough for this piece, for one thing. So, bravo, Rex. Oh, my God.
Well,
thank you very much.
I have to say, I think you're probably more intelligent than you give yourself credit for. Rex's pieces, especially if you hear and read one of them for the first time, are just really amazing and overwhelming in how intelligent they are. But excellent comment there. And Kel, your thoughts.
Well, I wasn't real sure until Adam mentioned the Jews and stuff, and then I had to look through it, and I said, what the hell is he talking about? Oh, okay, I got it. The language, you know, Rex, I love the language you use in your poetry, but sometimes it's really difficult for my mind to bend around it, okay? But what I really like the best was, are you ready for soy, locust, and lemongrass leafage for your holiday feasting? Fuck all, I'm a carnivore. I like that bit. I really do, because it's getting to where everything is green, you know, and, you know, take care of this and take care of that, and it's, come on, give me some meat. You know, so I like that bit. The rest of it, it's going to take me a little while to go through it and really understand where and exactly you're coming from. So, but otherwise, I love the language. I really do. I just don't always understand it. So very well done.
Thank you, Kel.
Absolutely. Well said there, Kel. I really like this, Rex. As always, you are very impressive. You speak your mind in such a beautiful and bold way. I, too, liked the part where you said, are you ready for soy locust and lemongrass leafage for your holiday feasting? Feck all, I'm a carnivore. Great humor there, and it really speaks to me of how people will tell you how you're supposed to live, how we live in an overly politically correct society. I also really like Nothing to See from Glasgow Grins, the Chelsea Smiles Man, Meeple Tones Your, and how you play with your imagery with that pressure line, I thought was really cool. And Snake Oil, Venom, Planes or Planes, Coast to Coast, Calamari, Tentacled Inroads, Toast, and that deep cackling all the way. I like how you open up with the snake oil vermin, like the idea of those ones who sell the medicine in the bottles that is nothing more than, you know, snake oil, you know. And there's a real, like, idea to the powers that be concentrating on themselves rather than on what's going on around them. Your ability to play with language, as always, is just absolutely wonderful. And I really like Warm or Frozen and Prism Eye Glare. One can smell the tarnished foul steak and poison air, but sell the mentality bred faithless. There are those that simply only have faith in what can get them money. That's just a thought that came to my head. I'm not saying that's what you meant in that line. That's just a thought that came to my head. So, really just a wonderful, intelligent write, and very well done.
Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Anything you'd like to say about your write, Rex?
please.
All right. The opening stanza, that's from the High Chancellor, Adam Sutler, from V is for Vendetta. That was his message to the world.
Saw that in the notes.
That funny bit with the soy locust lemongrass reaches to had a system. Actually, that's been pushed out by the media and other entities of late, over the last few months. The beaver, the state of mourning, that goes back to what just happened in Wisconsin. The Nantucket angle, that's where JoJo went for Thanksgiving without saying a damn word about what happened in Wisconsin. Zhonghua refers to all the Chinese people, because that's where the oil is going right now. Those 50 million barrels that he unleashed. The true Inanna shot of the pressure was actually something uttered by JoJo in a speech when he couldn't get his mind set in an angle. And everything else, little hints here and there to what's going on. Golmanov and Solmanov, back in the Julian calendar, January and February weren't recognized as months. They didn't have real names. Those are the Anglo-Saxon names for January and February. February actually, Solmanov actually means mud month. And Golmanov means after Yule, so after Christmas. So got a little bit of everything.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. And now I'm going to make you all listen to a less intelligent rite by reading my poem. And this is...
Oh, leftover turkey sandwich. Okay.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Okay. And it goes like this. I was hitchhiking my way down County Road A with not much to do and not much to say except to hum and eat a leftover turkey sandwich. That sandwich sure was good, bits and pieces of turkey stuffed between two slices of whole wheat bread and smothered in cranberry sauce. Pretty soon I had to go with just eating because it turns out it's near to impossible to hum and chew at the same time. I was looking around at my surroundings and there weren't a dang car in sight, just a couple of rundown houses that looked more like shacks and deep, dark woods on either side of the road, and I started thinking about how they looked like the type of woods that would have hungry bears or rabid raccoons or even serial killers, and I decided to gulp down the rest of my lunch and write proper glutton style. Now, mind you, not because I am a glutton, but because I knew critters liked leftover turkey sandwiches. I wasn't so sure about how much serial killers had a hankering for them, but I sure as heck weren't taking no chances. After I was done eating, I washed it all down with cool water from my thermos. After a couple minutes of silence, I went back to humming. And after a couple minutes of humming, no particular tune, I went back to silence. I started thinking about how when I am listening to someone else hum, it don't take long before I end up wanting to slap them upside the head. And if me, a pacifist, could want to slap a hummer, what would a crazy-eyed killer listening to me want to do? I put myself into thinking like a lunatic because I'm an open-minded person who always tries to see things from other people's point of view, even people I disagree with. I realized if I was a serial killer and someone was humming and it was annoying me, I would do whatever I had to do to shut up that idiot humdinger, especially if I knew they were a pacifist who wouldn't fight back and only ate meat for Thanksgiving and 3 to 6 days after. Now, don't ask me why I only eat for Thanksgiving and 3 to 6 days after or how I could think a killer in these parts would know this, but we all have our quirks and it's better to be safe than sorry. Right then and there, I decided what I needed to do was sing a song with lyrics that made me seem more crazy than serial killers, hungry bears, or raccoons with rabies. And it didn't matter if the lyrics were true or not, and truth be told, I won't be telling you if they're the God-given truth or not. I'm sure you're a good person and all, but I just can't take any chances that the truth or not truth will be getting back to whatever malicious and horrific things be hanging around in those woods. And so this is the little ditty I sing, which may or may not be true. Sometimes I eat red beans, sometimes I eat cornbread. Sometimes I like to kill, till a person's good and dead. Sometimes I say to the waitress, I sure like a piece of pie. Sometimes I like to kill, till the waitress up and dies. This here is the chorus. Oh, right up in Wisconsin, right off County Road A, you can commit atrocities and get on clean away. And in the middle of the woods is a motel restaurant where the food is good digesting. And while you're staying there, management, don't be asking questions. Sometimes I like to eat hot pickles. They give my spirit such a thrill. And other times I can't be satisfied unless I get to kill. And I kept singing that song loud and clear because I wanted anything and everything in that woods to know that I was just as scary, if not more so. I was even singing in the truck when I finally got a ride, but only for a little bit because it turns out when people pick up hitchhikers, they'd rather be listening to country music than a song about tasty food and killing. I'll never understand some people's taste in music or food, and trust me, when it comes to understanding, I try harder than most. End poem.
Great. All right, Adam, why don't you kick us off with a comment? What'd you think?
Oh, you said me? Oh, who?
Oh, you, Adam.
Oh, okay. Well, this was... So it definitely... What?
Pure lunacy.
Okay. Yes, it's definitely. Like, it's kind of funny, like the leftover turkey sandwich. But no. So it almost has that same. I don't know. I'm trying to get to what I'm feeling from it. The same way that the prompt had. It like her narrative is like unique and totally different. Right, it's totally almost a different total narrative, but the way it's done is totally similar to his, like, dragging, like, you through this story, where it's almost like you have to kind of find the humor. If there wasn't humor, you would have stopped it. Like, you would have been like, I'm not listening to this any longer. But not because it's an excellent write, and it's like, so funny. And then the person is so neurotic, right? Like, they're like, I love serial killers. I'm thinking about how I'm a serial killer. And I'm out here just waiting for a ride and, you know, eating my turkey sandwich. And I'm afraid, really, that some critters are going to come out of the woods or maybe a serial killer of some sort. And I like them. But am I a serial killer? I could be just as dangerous. How about that? And it's like, you're, like, getting dragged through this neurotic sort of song. And it's really actually very creepy, too. And then you kind of see their mind. And it's like, well, they are a very kind of, this is a dodgy person. And if I was the hitchhiker picker-upper person, I'd be like, maybe you ought to be more cautious about who you pick up on those roads. You're like, unimposing person just munching on actually they gobble it down, I guess. And then it's not really, I don't know, it was really good. I really loved it, and it was awesome listening to Pam go through. But then there's, like, the end actually kind of like stands against it all in a way. I guess maybe it's just a way of summing up who they really are, that they try to get on with everyone and understand everybody. So they're so empathetic and open that they really don't have a sort of grudge against anybody. They try to see all sides of an issue, which I really appreciate because I'm very similar in that aspect. But, like, they do have, like, their quirks. But, like, they say, like, I like quirks in people, and even if I don't agree, I still kind of appreciate who they are as a human being. And it's really cool. Like, even the serial killers, right? She even has the empathy for the serial killer. Like, It's wild. It was a wild toss here, I'll tell you. Thank you, fam.
Thank
it was great.
Thank you.
Well said, Adam. Because in this one, a serial killer was born. That turkey was long pork in between them two slices of wheat bread. All right, Kel, what you got?
Oh, very Hannibal Lecter, right.
Oh, my God. I love this, Pam. Absolutely love this. The story just gets deeper and deeper and darker and funnier all the way through it. Just starting with the damn sandwich. God. And then the imagination just takes over, and next thing you know, you think it's going to be a serial killer or raccoon with rabies coming out of the woods. That's just really, and then, you know, I thought it was really clever, you know, about the humming bit. And someone was humming, and it was annoying me. I would do whatever I had to shut it up. That is it, humdinger especially. If I knew they were a pacifist, who wouldn't fight back and only ate meat for Thanksgiving? Oh, my God. This is really, really a lot of humor and very clever. And like Adam was saying, it's very neurotic.
Neurotic was kind of the tone I was going for. Oh, and I think anything can be done in excess, including being empathetic or open-minded. It's like that quote, and I can't remember who it's from, but there's a quote that says, if you're too open-minded, your brains will spill out.
See? The neuroticism, the neuroticism and the empathy work. That's how a serial killer draws in their victims.
Oh, now I'm scared.
Especially since you went and lectured in here with, sometimes I eat red beans, sometimes I eat cornbread,
right.
Sometimes I like kill, kill, kill till a person's good and dead. See? Yes. I'll even take the waitress out for dinner. She's all mine.
Yep.
I think it was all just an act. See, this is a serial killer out on the troll waiting to get picked up. So they've got a new ride and someone else to eat.
Rick, you do that faux Virginia Hannibal Lecter action so well.
Well, we here serving gentlemen.
All the way to the
FBI. Right, good food, you know, and a little bit of tasty wine.
Oh, my goodness.
Fava beans. Don't forget the fava beans.
Oh, you gotta do it right. Fava beans.
There you go.
Should have added that in there. That would have been great. Some slurping sound. Oh, my God. So, actually, I'm wondering, is she talking about herself, though? Is she, like, she's the one trying to hum, right? So she's annoying herself in her neurosis. Is this true? I mean,
yeah.
Is she the pacifist?
Yes.
Is she the person she doesn't like? She's like, I don't really like myself.
Right. Like, I don't like it when other people hum, and here I am humming, and, yeah, it just begs the question, do I actually even like myself? But this is actually, yeah, mostly made up. There are little tidbits of truth, like, you know, County Road A was actually a road that I lived by in my non-Wisconsin.
A lot of serial killers come from Wisconsin.
You know what? I was actually talking
it
to
It ain't the bears
are
eating
earlier,
people.
And, you know, Wisconsin, I don't think, is even in the top five for serial killers. The thing is, though, we get some of the really memorable ones, like
that's right.
Jeffrey Dahmer. You know, John
Wayne.
You know,
when you've got a history of really ghoulish gobblers.
Ghoulish gobblers. Ghoulish gobblers.
Dahmer's originally from old Dayton, Ohio, which isn't that far from me.
Hey, y'all are just border towns when it comes to traveling. Hey, we can walk down that road. I can hit on that state and come back home for supper tomorrow.
And you're invited.
Right.
Yeah. It may be the main course.
Oh, my God.
That was fun.
And as
so
a rule, yes,
say?
Serial killers go out in the woods and they do what the bears do. They take a dump.
Yep. further. Right, that's exactly what we do.
Great dissonance in conversation there, Rex. Way to just, like, throw everybody off. Amazing.
I know, right? So true. All right. Well, let's go ahead and continue on, like Rex said, so we can try to get some more done. And we have Fried Green Tomatoes by Brother Jacob. And Kel, will you give that a read for us, please?
I would be happy to. See here. Fried Green Tomatoes. That's actually a good movie. By Brother Jacob. I often wonder about Alice's restaurant. I wonder what's there to eat. I wonder what fruit and veggie. I wonder what kind of meat. I wonder if she has fried green tomatoes. They're my favorite treat. End poem. Oh, short and sweet.
Great read, Kel. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got?
All right. Well, yeah, we were discussing this a little bit on another show. And what I really liked is I could have seen him doing more with it, but at the same time, I really liked that he made it work as a brevity. Anybody who has watched Fried Green Tomatoes and knows that the meat is made out of the abusive ass, it works really well because Wright doesn't blatantly say anything like that, first of all, the way he has the couplets and each end line, that second line of each couplet rhymes with all three. But I like how he asks you the questions. He sits there pondering, and I really like, I wonder what kind of meat, like, is it the same kind, does Alice's restaurant serve the same kind of meat as they serve at the Whistle Stop Cafe, which, by the way, the Whistle Stop Cafe was the name of the place in the movie Fried Green Tomatoes. I like that he tries to find the other connection by asking, I wonder if she has fried green tomatoes. To me, there's really an underlying tone of humor and an underlying tone of darkness that works, to get both those out in a brevity, I think is really clever. So this was very well done.
I just said, Ken, thank you. And Kel, how about you?
I'm going to have to watch that movie again. It's been a long time. I love Fried Green Tomatoes, the movie, and the actual treat. But I don't remember too awful much more about that. This is really a very clever little write. So there you have it. I really don't have too much more to say. It's just very clever.
Thank you, Kel. And Adam, how about you?
Right, so the only reference I would be able to really... So without Pam, I would have been lost. So with only having Alice's restaurant as a reference and not Fried Green Tomatoes, I haven't seen the movie. I know, like, Midwestern blasphemy. But so without having that, I'm at a loss. But Pam shed light into that it is this brevity. Keeping that in mind, you have to read more into what is being said in the context of what was said, right? So the questioning, right? That's a big thing in Alice's restaurant, too. It's all about the questioning. What is this? What's going on? Why is this happening? Why? But without having seen the movie, yeah, I really can't go any further without you. But Pam and, she totally kind of helped us see what's going on in this.
It's actually a really good movie that I highly recommend.
I'm going to roll off your thought because this coming after Pam's right has me going right back to, there's a serial killer here. What kind of meat? And then the thought of fried green tomatoes as the garnish, as their favorite treat, kind of hits it off. Yeah, there's a little bit of lectrish meal going on here, too.
Oh, I see that now. I didn't catch that because he never refers to the she. I kind of see that now. I'm like, because I wonder what kind of meat. I wonder if she has fried green tomatoes. I don't know. Or is that Alice? Is he referring to Alice's restaurant? Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Yes.
I'm lost.
I like that observation.
Coming after Pam's, right, this fit right into the same thought that I had. Well, it's a little, maybe a little bit darker note to this, because I haven't seen the movie either.
Yeah, there's definitely a darker note to this.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. But maybe part of that's because, I, like I said, I've seen the movie, but I think it's cool that you caught on to that little tidbit at the end.
You'd want something a little bit fried and maybe a little sour and sweet at the same time to wash down whatever meat you just swallowed.
Exactly. All right. Are we ready to try to get a couple more in?
Yep. What we got?
All right. Up next is Accept Alice by Peter Solway. And, Adam, would you give that a read for us, please?
Oh, my God. I hope I do this justice. So I'm reading it for the first time. Well, actually, I read it way early on. But this will be the first time reading it aloud, so bear with me. Except Alice. Arlo swoons some hopeful tunes, never to get it on with Alice. Together mescal and jesting out back in her kitchen. Plot somewhere thereabouts. Giving Dad Woody the nod on themes of unrequited love. Just hold out your hand to some groovy god hippies on psychedelics, socialists parachuting from above, sing in L.A. Spanish, dance with Shiva in flower beds. Luck of the dosage, Las Vegas pharmaceuticals, shamanic potions, distilled venom, snake-donated shed of skin, flip of Yoko before John converted lesbian. Alice still indifferent, happily self-sufficient, serve and be done. Dreaming her own dreams with pencil and pad, appetites, literate demands, pie with cream, content with single bed, radio for a tune, not cold as Canberra of marble and bronze. Lake of evening going slowly home, Third Reich of wind, inhospitable mountains hissing, Jew be gone, never to be chosen lover. After I first saw her row in front of projector, Veronica, there getting closer, with Mr. Smooth Talker, fingers in his curly hair, lap of California, happy to share. Saturday matinee cinema, theme of hope's disaster, Australia of defeated despair, and capital of disappointments. Drive in without a car, mother without a father, me without Veronica. Could happily stayed at home Saturday afternoon, obeyed mum, crew cut the lawn, saluting his gnome in gasoline passing. Read test, primer for exam to simply explain, weep at end again. Fish out Nature Lovers magazine, fountains and badminton, surf and sun. My Alice down her hole, rabbit conversing, party with guests. Veronica probably kissing that look-alike Bob Dylan. Mother not cooking, gone dining with friends. Snow clouds moving in, F to the ether, that stupid movie I reckon. Luck of mating, not my thing, strumming one's banjo. Pick of the audience, an old tortoise now, found most often at home, address, shaving the grass, blessing the compost. Yeah, man, kilos of the shit, witches flying in. End the poem. Oh, my God, I butchered it.
Great read, Adam.
Thank you very much.
Kel, why don't we start with you? What'd you think?
Oh, come on, Rex. It's Peter Solway.
All right. Pam, you get to start. I'll come back, Kel.
Go on.
Pam.
Oh, yes. All right.
Pam,
well,
that's me.
Okay, wait. Who's commenting, me or Kel?
You.
Okay.
We've been drinking.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah, this is just wonderful. Adam, you did a great read with this. I love how he always has these pop culture references. And I like how this has the Alice's Restaurant, Alice in Wonderland mashup feel to it. And the humor that Giving Dad would even nod on themes of unrequited love. Now, at first I thought maybe like Veronica was Veronica from Scooby-Doo and he had like a major crush, but then I figured it was probably actually a girl. And I like the reference to reading Tess of the Aubervilles or however you pronounce. I can't remember exactly, but, you know, to me this just kind of had that whole energy of that coming of it's like a coming-of-age type rite, but it's like coming to age in a time of political upheaval where shit is just flying all over the place, and you're trying to maintain some sense of normality in your life, and there is no sense of normality. Lake of Evening Going Slowly Home, Third Reich of Wind, and Hospital Mountain, Sissing Jew Be Gone, Never to Be Chosen Lover. And there's that whole idea of rejection, but it's rejection that works on two levels. It's the personal rejection of being rejected by the girl that you want because she's wearing the tight sweater and making out with somebody else at the drive-in, and being rejected by society, or watching maybe not even personally, but you know, watching a certain group of people be rejected down society. And I really like My Alice down her whole rabbit conversing party with guests. It's like it's that idea of the girl that's such a hole. There's a party going on. That was probably horrible to say, but. But really, this is—it's witty, it's wry, it's humorous, and with like most of his pieces, it's just got some wonderful social commentary. And I could keep picking out lines that I just absolutely adore, but I'll pass it to someone else.
Nicely said, Pam. I thought Veronica might have been one of two things: Veronica from Archie and Veronica. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Or the
that's right.
Veronica Lodge was the peekaboo girl back in the 40s.
Ah.
And, all right. That first stanza hits on the note of easy thought there, not getting it on with Alice. Mescal ingesting out and back in her kitchen plot somewhere thereabouts. The second stanza, giving Dad Woody the nod. There's a double whammy motif in that because his father was named Woody. Yes, Dad Woody. He could have just left it at Dad. I think the Woody angle with the nod was the thought to unrequited love, and yes, the thought of not getting handled, so to speak. Hippies on psychedelics. I thought the third one down, luck of the dosage, was kind of, I got something I shouldn't have had. And then he hits on Las Vegas pharmaceuticals. That reminded me of what's his name? Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Snake donated shed a skin. A little bit of Jim Morrison in there, but also sort of the rubber angle. I slept with Yoko before John. Converted lesbian. Okay. Nice touch there. Alice still indifferent, but that thought with the what you hit on, Alice. It was my Alice down her hole. Rabbit conversing, party with guests. Well, the thought with rabbit conversing means the rabbit's still alive and ain't dead. Therefore, she's not pregnant. And Adam, how about you?
Everything you guys said, it's clever. It's very, like Pam was mentioning, like coming of age sort of. I don't necessarily know anything about the writer, but it almost has that feel, like inexperienced, the unrequited, like all that, but it also is a commentary of that point of view from being young, kind of inexperienced, being pulled many directions, lustfully towards a love interest that really it's not returned at all, and you're watching her go on. The social climate coming up in that way, and then the subtle nods to other things that, you know, music's such a big part of being young. Well, and some, you know, it sticks around too if you love it, but for some people it fades away as they get older. And you can see he's very passionate about music, having these references, and you know, the Fear and Loathing is typically a big deal for young people when they first, like, catch that movie or read the book when they're young. You know, it can mean a lot to them. Similar, like, when you're a teenager and you read Catcher in the Rye as a young man, like, it speaks to you. Then you read it later and you're older and you're like, oh, that's trash. I mean, not to Fear and Loathing that ever would be that, but, okay, I was unprepared. I read and I was like, I thought, I didn't know you were coming to me, right? But I appreciate it. Yeah, you guys nailed it, man. That was good.
I get the Catcher in the Rye bit, which kind of circles right back to the serial killers, because they seem to love that book.
I know, right? I was like, I can't believe John Lennon was killed over that book. That's a travesty. Like, I read that book as a grown man, and I was like, this kid is awful. He's awful. It's all his fault. He messes up his own life. He feels so – he has such a pity party for himself when he's privileged, of all things, right? And it's like, this kid is a joke. But he has a heart, and you kind of see that, in Catcher in the Rye, he has a heart. But, like, where do these killers get off, like, with this book? It makes no sense.
All right, Kel, we're circling back to you now. Uh-oh. Did we lose Kel?
Oh, no, she's still there.
I'm here. Oh, golly, he blows me away. He really does. I love his writing. But there is just so much in it that I, just like yours, Rex, I can't wrap my brain around it. Because I'm not real sure what book you're talking about. But, yeah. It says, about the only thing I got was content with a single bed, radio for a tune, not as cold as Canberra of marble and bronze, because Canberra is the capital of Australia. My son actually got to go there because it was in New South Wales. But otherwise, this is just, it's a really deeply moving, psychedelic, and amazing write, as Peter's stuff usually is. But it's just so far beyond me, I can't pick it out.
What you need to learn to do, Kel, is do what I do. When the poem is really abstract or surreal, make stuff up off the top of your head and say it with confidence.
I think you've told me that
people
before.
People will think you just know what you're talking about.
Oh, please, Pam. Please. You don't got me for a second with that.
No, Pam. It blew me.
Oh, gosh. But oh, awesome gosh. Show tonight, Rex. I had a lot of fun, and I have a feeling Kel and Adam did too.
Absolutely.
Oh, definitely.
Yes, it was a fun evening. Thank you. And great having you here, Adam and Kel. And I do have a couple leftovers. I will put them on the board for first thing on next Sunday show. So they'll go before Blondie. So we'll have a couple extras.
Awesome.
Cool.
And we'll
can't wait for next week, though. Absolutely.
Oh, Blondie ought to be cool.
Yeah, Blondie. Oh my God. I love that.
Absolutely.
Heart of Glass. I already know what song I'm picking.
Well, I've got the contest up with 10 songs on it, and if they don't please you, pick one of her other songs. That's always good.
Heart of Glass. That's me in a nutshell.
Oh, I've got that one up along with.
That's gonna be cool. That's gonna be cool.
Call Me. Detroit 442. What else we got?
Well, Rex, and you guys, like, I think this was a great pick. It was unorthodox, way out of left field from what kind of I was used to when I seen the type of songs you guys chose. So, but it was awesome. It was so fitting, and, like, what came out of this, like, what sprung up from everyone was so unique and different, and, like, it was cool. Very cool.
Oh,
very brave, too.
We can have people do parodies. But, hey, if you don't want to do a parody, just give us what the song speaks to you. And that's the main idea.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it was a brave, bold pick for, like, because really at first I was like, I don't want to do this.
I thought it was kind of apropos. I haven't used that one before, and I know it's an 18-minute tune, but it does got a whole lot in it, and it is funny as hell in plenty of parts, especially the repeats of the 27 8x10 glossy photographs with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back explaining everything. There's some great fun moments in the piece itself, just offering up little tidbits of life.
Went around and around and around. You know, it's just, that's the part that got me, was just the tune of the whole thing. You know, the way it flowed. I mean, that got me. And I just listened to it. I just read it. You know, and it says, oh, my goodness, this thing just goes in circles, you know, and that's what I tried to do with mine, is just try to get it to go in the same rhythm, in a way, as Arlo's, and it was just fantastic. It was an awesome read. It took me a minute.
All right, gang, we're at the back end of things, and we'll see y'all next week.
All right. Bravo, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.